There was a list when Barcelona last thought about this. There was time, isn't there? I've just got a message from Tommy. I can't show you that. A nice little one, isn't it?
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
You're welcome back. 7 minutes past eight on this Monday morning, and we are turning our attention back to the Premier League action over the course of the last couple of days. Mark Lawrenson, good morning to you.
Morning.
Let's start with Saturday evening. Manchester United hammering Tottenham Hotspur. The crisis at Old Trafford is over.
Well, let's wait. Listen, they've got Man City next weekend, haven't they? And Atalanta midweek. Mm. But they were better. Obviously, they played with the kind of three-stroke, five at the back. There was far better commitment. They got kind of behind the ball as well when they lost it, I thought, obviously. Playing two up front was good for them as well, with Ronaldo had a partner with him, and obviously that worked brilliantly for them. And you could just see there was a difference about them. But you know what? They shouldn't have had to be, should they? Because players at this level, that's how they should be, week in, week out.
Do you like that shape, Mark? Do you think they should proceed with it over the next little while?
Well, they didn't concede, which is a bonus, so that will build the confidence up. Yeah, I don't see any great problem with that whatsoever. I think, you know, the three central defenders understood the roles. Maguire can come out and play, which he tried to do. Varane came out and played a little bit as well into the midfield. So, yeah, I think for the players that they've got, that is probably the best system. The other thing as well is that they put the foot in on Saturday night, you know, both obviously Fred and McTominay, they put the foot in and they made some tackles. And also with that, when you get an extra man there in Fernandes in midfield, an extra body, it's far more difficult for the opposition team. But it's strange that it's taken a 5-0 whopping to suddenly realise that actually this is the best way that they should play.
Isn't it incredible? And also it's taken multiple transfer windows where they have signed players who aren't suited to the system. Like, you can throw Donny van de Beek in there. You can definitely throw Jadon Sancho into the exact type of player who would not play well in the system. Who there simply is not a position for a right winger or somebody who plays on the right of a front three in this system. So it's extraordinary that this is the sort of lack of planning or lack of thinking that's gone on around the club.
Well, yeah, especially when, I mean, I'm not quite sure how long Ollie's been there, but he's been there for quite a few transfer windows. And the basic idea of the manager is to build the team. And when you build the team, you build it in a certain way where you know you want to play. And, you know, you don't necessarily get all the best players, but you get players who can play in the system and do a really, really good job for you. So, I mean, you know, the young lads, the likes of Rashford and Greenwood, looking at the weekend thinking, crikey, we might not be getting in this team. You know what? Never a bad thing, because if and when they do, if somebody gets Cavani gets injured or something, or Ronaldo, then obviously they've got to come in and prove that they're worth a place. But I think they've now got a little bit of a competition for places. In fairness to Ollie, last week, obviously, he must have worked hard with them, and this was the shape. They've probably been working on it all week, and it worked. The only problem is Tottenham were woeful. And they really, seriously, were woeful.
On that, Mark, like, can you kind of imagine yourself as a player if you were playing nowadays? You're playing in an amazing stadium against Manchester United. Great atmosphere in the place when you're going well. You know, you're playing for a club that looks after you, pays you very well. You're playing for a manager who, by all accounts, is a good man. And you produce a performance like that. I mean, how can... Because these players surely haven't become, bad people overnight. How is this happening?
Well, Kane doesn't look like he's enjoying himself, does he? That's the first thing. He worked hard enough. But you can just almost see in his body language at times, which is, I should have gone to Manchester City, which I think will probably happen now, excuse me, in January. It's affected Son as well, because Son is a real, real top player. He doesn't quite look the same. And I thought Lucas Moura was the only one who looked like he was capable of doing anything at the weekend, and they took him off. And a lot of the other players just look like 95ers. They just look fairly ordinary players. So That's obviously a massive problem for Tottenham. They're going to have a rethink. I mean, it sounds, with the noises coming out of Tottenham, that Nuno might be gone within the next few days. Well, I mean, what a sad and sorry state of affairs that is.
When you say 9-to-5ers, you kind of mean like clocking in, clocking out, doing basically turning up and doing no more?
Well, not as in just you know, they're just like normal players. There's nothing exactly special about them. You know, the goalkeeper's not been good for 18 months, 2 years. I can't for the life of me remember how many times they've changed the players at the back, whether they're centre-backs or whether they're full-backs. And they just look like they've got an ordinary team. But it's not an ordinary team if Son and Kane are firing. You know, it then becomes a good team. But they're not.
Yeah, and when you say that about Kane as well, Mark, because just Owen was speculating before the show that, you know, would Manchester City sign a player who looks like he's down tools? But, like, do you think his legacy is now tainted at Spurs if this goes on much further? No.
No. No, I think he's a top player who's just got a bit of a monk on at the moment with the club because they wouldn't let him go. So, no, I think it really is a top player. Listen, for all we know, he might be thinking, don't get injured till January the 1st and then I can go. Look, you don't know with these lads, but I think he seems to be a really honest guy. His work ethic, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, he's trying very, very hard. He hardly had any chances, let's put it that way. That's the first thing. The service was really, really poor. But you can just almost see in his body language, it's like, nice stadium, but what am I doing here?
Can that change at any point during the season, like in terms of your stance there, that he's got enough credit in the bank to either A, earn a big move, or B, not have his legacy tarnished? If this continues as the season goes on, or the body language continues to be poor, is there a chance that Manchester City turn around and say, listen, not sure if this guy's worth whatever it's going to be in January, £120 million?
Well, maybe that's what they're hoping. No, but maybe what they're hoping is it's not 120 million, it's gone down to 100, so save the 20 big ones. Look, you know, he's a top player. So, yes, they wanted him. I can't believe that they never took him, which is very, very strange for me. And then one or two people now saying, well, they weren't that interested in him. I'm not sure that was true. I think that's all part of the politics of trying to get the price down. But, no, I think if Tottenham said on the 1st of January, opening the transfer window, that he was available for sale, I think this time there'd be more than one. I think there'd be one, two or even three teams maybe want to take him.
On the Nuno front then, I mean, it's an awful situation for them to be in if they have to sack this guy, considering they went through how many managers before actually arriving on this guy. It's not exactly like the managerial roundabout has got filled up with other candidates. Antonio Conte's name seems to be linked with him. But they kind of did the groundwork during the summer, Mark, in terms of finding a new manager, and they ended up with this guy. Now they got to do the groundwork all over again. Are they really going to find a better manager?
Well, who knows? They're now saying Fonseca, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think he was close at the time, so they'll know his thoughts. They'll know what and how he wants to play. So that's probably a bonus to them. And I think the fact that Nuno, A, didn't cost them any money, and I think I'm right in saying has he got 2 years contract?
Yeah, and there was some report as well that they can get rid of him without a massive payoff as well. I'm not sure when that can happen. I'm not sure if it's now or if it's in the middle of the season or the end of the season, but it won't be
too
damaging.
I'll tell you what that will be. That will be that if the team don't qualify for the Champions League, that'll be a big thing in terms of his bonus. Well, if he goes today, he's not qualifying for the Champions League because it's impossible at the moment because he's still got games to play. So that wouldn't surprise me. Chief exec at Tottenham is a very wily so-and-so, and he knows what he's doing. But in terms of this appointment, and it's not working out for them. And the problem is as well is that once people, well, you heard it, didn't you, in terms of the crowd. I mean, and a lot of them cleared off anyway, way before the end. And I just don't think it looks good for him. I don't know how he's really going to survive, to be honest with you. But he is one of the good guys.
It was a pretty extraordinary weekend in the Premier League elsewhere, Mark. Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoffs, Manchester City getting beaten at home, Liverpool dropping points at home to Brighton. This was not an outcome anybody would have seen after the first 10, 15 minutes at Anfield on Saturday. What changed? What did Brighton bring to proceedings that rattled Liverpool after they went 2-0 up?
Well, they were always a threat. I think that's the first thing. And once you carry that threat, obviously it also gives you a little bit of thinking, well, you know, we can pinch a goal here or whatever. I think Liverpool were just off. It happens. And do you know what? Quite often it happens after you've had, you know, some outstanding results. And of course, you know what it's like in this game at the moment, that you know, you go to Man United and you win 5-0 and everything's absolutely brilliant. And then the next game, you get a little bit of a not quite the performance that you wanted. And normally with Liverpool, even when they have that, you know, they have the ability to win the game. I mean, obviously the Mane VAR goal was a big thing, because if that had been awarded, that was good night. That was ending up 4 or 5, wasn't it? You know, which the fine lines there are. And I think Graham Potter actually said that, the Brighton manager. They just weren't at it. And I think that's what Klopp will have said to them, that, look, you know, every week you try to be 9 out of 10, and occasionally when you're 8 or 7, that's when you've really got to hanker down and basically, you know, win the game by hook or by crook. And that just wasn't there at the weekend. Brighton played well. I mean, you know, in the City game, I mean, it was amazing. When I heard it was 1-0 to Palace quite early on, I thought, well, they'll be back and they'll win 3, 4 or even 5. And they just probably weren't. They're another one that quite weren't at the races after, you know, brilliant performances in Europe as well.
What do you make of Potter, actually? Because, the performance, Brighton basically went at Liverpool from the get-go. They had a chance after about a minute, a really, really good chance, but actually possibly the best chance of anyone had in the whole game. They were toe-to-toe. Second half, Laura, I thought they looked actually the better side, and Klopp spoke about. But, like, does he emerge as a coach now that other teams will look at and say, actually, you know, the narrative around who replaces Solskjaer isn't going to go away. Obviously, Spurs are looking for a manager. Are there managers from, you know, within England that can go on to better things? Because he just has them playing such a lovely brand of football as well.
Yeah, look, he's, you know, season by season, he got better. His teams have got better. And you look at the moment, you say they're doing a really, really good job. But are you seriously saying that, are one of the top four or one of the supposed top six, are they looking at him as manager? Possibly. Do I think it's a little bit early? Yep. I think if they have a really good season and manage to nick a top 10 place, then I think people will seriously look at him. I mean, I know all about Brighton. Obviously, I had 4 years there, and they're a fantastically run club. I mean, the owner, Tony Bloom, they don't owe anybody any money. He's, you know, built the stadium. He's built a brand new training ground. It's all good. They can attract players. The recruitment's good. You know, you sell White for 50 million and you bring 2 or 3 players in, which obviously makes economic sense, certainly. So, and the way he plays is good, but it's just a little bit early. I think we're always just, it's like anything. Everybody overreacts in the Premier League at the moment because it is the best league in the world, but it's almost... So Liverpool only draw and they're going, what's happened to Liverpool? You know, they beat Man United next week. Well, it's just the way the Premier League is. Mm. So he's got a chance and he's improving, and that's all that he can do is improve the team every single year. And I mean, the great problem last year was that they'd take the lead, couldn't get a second goal. Or this year, I mean, obviously, even now they've only scored 11 in 10 anyway, but they've stopped conceding, and what they have now is, they don't need that many chances actually to win a game, which, if you think about it, is not a bad way to play.
Yeah, it's been a complete 180. This time last year, they were creating loads of chances, couldn't get points on the board, and now it seems that they're overachieving as opposed to their chances, which is, as you say, a sign of how clinical they are. Like, just on that theme, and like across Saturday, like you mentioned the City result, the incredible thing about what Brighton and Palace did on Saturday was that this wasn't like Sam Allardyce's West Brom getting something off Klopp at Christmas. This was really well thought out, methodical. If you like XG, they both won on XG as well as on the scoreline. So has there been a shift, Mark, around those mid-table sides where it's like, okay, parking the bus and trying to nick a 1-0 win just is not going to wash against these big teams anymore?
Well, you know what it is? I think the longer you're in the Premier League, you can buy better players, because, you know, the money gets better and better, and that's what it is. I mean, what it has done, all this money now, is it's made a lot of those teams basically just into better teams, because they can attract, as I said, they can attract better players. I mean, I did an interview with the local Brighton paper on Thursday last, And I said it would be footballing suicide if Brighton took on Liverpool at Anfield. So it tells you what I know about it.
At least you admitted it.
I've been reminded on Twitter by about 72,000 people so far.
Yeah, in fairness, though, like to give yourself some kudos there, you may not have, forecast how the game developed and how Liverpool looked so open straight away. Like, Fabinho's loss was just, it was so apparent. Keita obviously went off injured. So they have a major hole in the defensive sort of midfield position. And, like, do you see that defence as solid as it once was? And I guess the question that Liverpool fans might be a small bit afraid to ask is Van Dijk quite as good as he was pre-injury? Or, like, well, it did surprise me that, like, Brighton to win at Liverpool on XG at Anfield with Liverpool's front three in the form they're in is fairly staggering.
Is it? Yeah. Well, Virgil's not, he's not quite at it. But, you know, when I say he's not quite at it, he's not world-class every week. He's had a couple of iffy days. And he's obviously got new partners as well, which probably doesn't help. So, no, they don't. They don't look quite the same. But, you know, I keep saying to you, this happens in football. You can't be brilliant every week. I mean, you know, the City result was, I just thought, was staggering. I mean, Palace have done really, really well, but kept drawing and drawing. But they look a completely different team and very much an in-your-face team, which is good. And for them, I mean, I'd hate to think what the price was for Palace to go and win at Man City 2-0, because I wish I would have had some of it. But it's the Premier League. And as I say, you know, the longer you're in it for, shall we say, smaller clubs, the better chance you have of getting a better team, because you get more and more money. And that's the great thing about the Premier League. Yes, okay, the top four will always be the top four, and you know, because they can just get the best players. But that level underneath, what you find now is that, you know, you can go shopping there in terms of buying footballers, and you can get a kind of, not necessarily young, but maybe early 20s player that you think can train on. And I think Brighton have done that. It looks like Palace might have done that as well, with one or two of their players. And it increases the potential of the team and increases the fact that, you know, they can go to places now and really hold their own and not just sit and park the bus as it was.
Chelsea have had a much kinder recent schedule than Liverpool. But is there any level of concern from a Liverpool perspective that you see someone like Keita going off injured at the weekend, and Chelsea have also had injuries, and yet they're killing teams, yet the next man up does seem to be as good as the person who's got injured in a lot of areas, that they just have depth, ridiculous depth in so many areas that Liverpool simply just don't have, and they might be a little bit more of a victim to fortune than Chelsea would be over the course of a 38-game season?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Mind you, the last two Chelsea games are what? Norwich at home and Newcastle away.
Yeah, very kind fixtures.
Yeah, which are win-wins. No, you're right. And I think, and we'll probably be talking about this all the season, which will be, they miss Wijnaldum. Wijnaldum, I think, misses them because obviously he's not in PSG's team. He's sat on his backside on the bench. So he was 1 o'clock favourite players because he carried everything out to the absolute letter of what he asked him to do in games. So they miss him. I mean, Keita, you know, what is in his fourth year now? He's kind of, we know he's a good player. Has he really shown as a good player over 3 or 4 months consistently? You'd argue no. Fabinho, obviously, they miss. Thiago, unfortunately, coming towards the end of his career, just keeps getting knocks, a bit like Matip as well, and they're out for a while. And Curtis Jones is obviously comes into play. And it's the way he's going to be. He's said all along that he's going to have to kind of balance the squad throughout the season and you know, take players out and bring players in and freshen it up that way. But, you know, with Liverpool, is what I like about them now is the fact that in terms of the transfer market, they decide who they're going to go and buy. And basically nobody really knows until they bought them. If you look at, you know, Van Dijk, Alisson, Jota, there was nobody knew anything about Jota, and even Van Dijk to a certain degree, you know, because loads of clubs were chasing them, and bang, Liverpool just went in and got him. And we all thought, 75 million, wow, you're having a laugh, but obviously you can double that now. So that's their thing. And I think because they didn't, well, they hardly did any business in the earlier window. And I think January will probably I won't say go to the Americans, that the Americans will already know, FSG will already know, and he goes, he might go, look, you know, if we're in this position, we might need two more. And what I will say about the Americans is, apart from obviously messing it up with the Super League thing, is they've always backed him, because, as I tell you every time I'm on this programme, is that, you know, they've got a sporting franchise and they know how it works. You get injuries, you get a loss of form, and you've got to keep, you know, improving the side.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one thing to finish up on then, Mark, from yesterday's games, West Ham United's win against Aston Villa 4-1, and just some beautiful football, the final goal in particular, just great sense of unselfishness from Antonio, then Lanzini for Bowen to tap into an empty net. Moyes has them playing brilliant football. Of course, Europe might be a little bit of a stumbling block over the next little while, but you have to make them a real contender for that fourth spot.
I'll tell him that to his face as well. No, I mean, listen, you see him yesterday after the game. He said, we can still do a lot better. That's absolutely 100% the way that is. I think the problem is that, and I think he's very much aware of this, if you lose Antonio, and Antonio hasn't got the best hamstrings in the world. He has got two of them, but they're not the best. He'll have 2 or 3 weeks out. But as Moisey said, the problem with that is he then needs another 2 or 3 weeks to get fit, because he's such a big unit and he's such a good player. And he said, we've got nobody else like him. So, and they're in every flipping competition, aren't they? Which he's happy with, but he's thinking, crikey, come March time, we might have hardly any players. But they've done great. He's a good manager if you give him time. I mean, the Man United must look at him now and must think, oh my goodness, what a mistake we made. But that's a different story.
Yeah, I mean, like, what would have happened? What do you think would have happened had they just stuck with him for another couple of seasons? Just respected the fact that he wasn't Alex Ferguson, and that nobody was going to be Alex Ferguson, and that things weren't going to be that good all the time.
And also, if you really think about it, going back to Sir Matt Busby, how many managers did they have until they got somebody? So they'd already experienced the fact that, you know, he had this icon of a manager, and it's always going to be very, very difficult when somebody else comes in. Moisey builds teams. That's what he does. And I know generally now in the Premier League, you don't get time to do that. And maybe at Manchester United, you definitely, the big clubs, you definitely don't get time to do it. But that's you know, you don't have to look at what he did at Preston when he started, but obviously at Everton. And he made them fortunes as well. Not that Man United would need to make fortunes in terms of selling players. He made Everton fortunes, absolute fortunes, in some of the players that they bought cheaply and sold on. He's just a really good manager if you give him time. And everyone thinks, you know, he's dour, he's this, he's not. I mean, away from the game, he so isn't. But he's just a real, really, really good manager. And the other thing as well that he always says about the people at West Ham is when he goes to ask for something, they very, very rarely say no. He said they've been great with him.
It is mad that to think that, you know, like, I think Rice has spoken about this, how everyone is just so happy in training, and it's a complete antithesis, I guess, Laura, to how you would imagine from the outside. Manchester United players, probably, it didn't look like anyone was, you know, they didn't look like they were enjoying themselves. And to be fair, I think he got the shortest time of any manager since Ferguson, and I think it's the one thing in football, managers in general get sacked far too readily, I think we can all say with him that was the case here, because his record either side of it is phenomenal.
Absolutely. And you know, he always says about West Ham is that the signing of the two Czech Republic players has been massive for him, because relatively they didn't cost that much money. He said, but they've been brilliant. He said, so he said, you go training and they stop behind straight away. And he said, sometimes you have to go out and say, look, that's enough. You know, don't do any more, because you ruin your legs for the weekend. He said, but what's happened is there's a knock-on effect. He said, then everybody's doing it. And he said, you know, sometimes in training when they turn up and you kind of, you know, and I've done it myself, we all done it, you think, oh, I don't fancy training today, it's raining and it's this and it's whatever. He said, it's not like that. And he said, it's very, very, very competitive. And he said, you know, people like Rice, who's obviously a top player, but even the, you know, the senior pros as well that they have, said they've all bought into the fact that you've got to work really, really hard and then a little bit more, and you'll get your rewards, and that's exactly what they've got so far. But as he'll tell you, they've won absolutely nothing yet.
We're completely out of time, Mark, but in a word, who's going to get fourth place then if West Ham aren't in the race?
Man United.
Yeah, fair enough. Mark Lawrenson, thanks a million.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Mark Lawrenson there on the line.